at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Speak Up for the Climate. Our future is a constitutional right. On Monday, October 29th at 11:30 a.m. at Terry Schrunk Plaza in Portland. Speak Up for Climate supports the young plaintiffs in the historic Juliana versus United States court case. The event will feature music, art, relationship, and momentum building for local youth interconnections in action. Again, that's Speak Up for the Climate, Our Future is a Constitutional Right, on Monday, October 29th at 11:30 a.m. at Cherry Shrunk Plaza, 431 Southwest Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the League of Women Voters of Portland, providing unbiased election information online. Featuring a personalized guide, including candidate answers to questions, explanations of ballot measures, and links to recorded candidate interviews and nonpartisan voter forums. More information can be found at vote411.org. Next up is Preference with our host, Hedda.
Welcome, dear listeners. This is Preference. I'm your host, Hedda. Somia's in the booth making things happen. That was Spacer by Sheila and B. Devotion. We never forget Italo Disco from the good days. In a little bit of time, a little bit later in the show, we're going to chat with Alexander Chi. And then after that, we're going to hear kind of a podcast that Alyssa Pariah put together over the weekend, and I think it's pretty interesting and worth taking a moment to hear out And Alyssa's joined the program, has joined the station with her own program, The Struggle, Friday evenings. So please check that out. In the studio, I have Yiwon Chong and Brooks Nelson. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your film, the film that the two of you made together, Trans Dudes with Lady Cancer. Let's start with how this came to be as a project. I think there's probably a lot to that.
Well, it came about because we are housemates and good friends, mm-hmm. and we got diagnosed with cancer the same month, and a lot of things happened, and we were like, what are the chances of two people living together, basically chosen family, both transmasculine, getting diagnosed with lady cancer? The same month, but the same doctor. And Brooks have made a movie in the past. It's a filmmaker, so it just seems like a natural kind of progression.
Yeah, at some point, I think when we were kind of in it, or in the process of treatment, at some point we were like, you know what, some of this is kind of terrible, and it could be that this is an opportunity for us to document the process that we're going through so that we can share it and hopefully make it better. And we're both list makers, so the first thing we did was sit down and make a list of, okay, if we were going to do this, what would be our goals? So essentially we came up with 4 goals. One of the big ones is talking to transmasculine people about self-advocacy and making sure that we are taking care of our own healthcare, which can be really hard and a big emotional break, but just like getting the message out there, particularly when we have practitioners who will tell us, like a clear example is a lot of doctors will tell trans men after top surgery that they don't need to have mammograms or have breast chest exams because essentially it's a double mastectomy, so you don't need to have it anymore. And that's just false. And we need to get that message out. We need to make sure that guys know to get their stuff checked. What was this? You want to do the next goal?
Yeah. So our next goal is really to talk to practitioners that this, you know, it's a real issue. It's an issue that impact people's lives, and also impacts people's experience with the healthcare sector, or you know, going to being misgendered. I mean, there's a lot of stress that is happening already as you're trying to deal with illness. So going through going to a clinic or a hospital where you're misgendered, creating that awkwardness, creating that sense of not lack of safety is not really helpful for someone's health, mental health, emotional health. So we want to share our experience with practitioners to hopefully have people understand the what it could feel like being misgendered and being just, you know, small little things that you might not think about. So for instance, when after I had surgery, because I had breast cancer, and even though my gender identity was known to people when we checked in, and you know, there was a whiteboard that Brooks would write, Yiwon goes by he. There was kind of a carelessness, I think, that was happening. And while I was still in bed healing or getting out of the kind of anesthesia, I remember someone coming into my room and asking me if I want prosthetics, breast prosthetics. So things like that just was, you know, just uncomfortable and not recognizing who I am. There's a I think practitioners can do a lot more to make patients more comfortable and welcome.
Mm-hmm. And then, because there's a lot, so I have good doctors, and at some point what we talked about, and also you and I have done political organizing, we were like, you know what? The individual doctors or the individual nurses or the individual practitioners are not going to actually make it better for everyone. So what we tried to do was figure out how to have a conversation with those practitioners to influence the institutions in which they work. So at Kaiser, which has the Gender Pathways Clinic and is a great system for trans folks at Gender Pathways, and yet how does that clinic and that one part of Kaiser actually influence the rest of Kaiser, because you can't get all the care that you need there. So that kind of expansion, it's like, who do we talk to? How do we get practitioners talking to whoever's doing the paperwork or the office or the insurance forms? So that we actually heard this really great story when we were talking with somebody up at OHSU about, there's a person who works in the insurance office up there who has taken it on as their own mission to try and reduce the number of no match rejections for insurance. So I might go in, regardless of what my gender marker is on my health records, somebody might say, you look like a match, you are not a match, or my driver's license has an M on it and I have to go in for a transvaginal ultrasound, the insurance company may reject that because it doesn't match. So this one person up at OHSU, whenever a no match comes up, actually takes the time to read the file and see if it's actually a trans person who's trying to access the services that they need, and can kind of reduce that. So stopping, I think when we heard that story, it was like, you know what? We just need to share this, because people, individuals who work in these institutions can actually make a positive impact on the people who they're caring for. So,
yeah, and our last goal was to really highlight the importance of chosen family being recognized, not just socially, but also in terms of how our policy reflect chosen family. So for me, as an immigrant, I came to the United States when I was 21. You know, being an immigrant and being queer, to me, chosen family is really, really important. The rest of my blood family are back in Malaysia, and I couldn't have done this without the help of my chosen family and chosen community. And you know, a lot of our policies are not don't recognize this formation of family. So, for instance, paid sick days. You know, you can't take for some people, you can't take sick days to take care of people who may not be considered your blood family. So there are so many ways that our country's policy reflect this really lack of recognition, and not just for queer people. I mean, there is the heteronormative family formation of as a husband and a wife and two kids, and you know, around like a house with a white picket fence, is really not the majority of how people live. So we, in the movie, we do highlight the importance of supporting each other.
Wonderful. I wanna Brooks and Yuan, I wanna go back to the first minute of our conversation, and I invite you to define for listeners what trans masculinity is.
I'm gonna.
So I identify as transgender, and I identify as trans masculine, and at least my gender expression is trans masculine. But I don't identify as a transgender man. That's not my gender identity. For, you know, many different reasons, I, being treated as a born female, being treated as a female for most of my life, because I transitioned kind of later in my life, a lot of my experience was really shaped by being seen as not feminine. Definitely, I was butch. Being seen as not a man, I don't actually know what being a man is. And you know, I have gotten this question before, and I just remember when I was a little kid, growing up in school, one of those questions that teachers ask you, you know, what do you want to be when you were when you grow up? And I remember telling the teacher, I want to be an engineer. And she said to me, you can't, you're a girl. So things like that, you know, that's one example, but I've gone through many examples where it really is a way that shaped who I am. And so that's one of the reasons I identify as transgender, and definitely expression-wise I'm transmasculine, but I don't identify as transgender, a man, because of my history and my experiences. So that's what transmasculine means to me.
For me, it's, so there's a lot of resonance in that, but it also is the way to talk about masculinity separate from maleness. And I think that, let me just think about this for a minute. So I think there's a lot of things. One is that when we look at gender on this like really amazing, beautiful, diverse continuum, for a long time, I thought that what I was somewhere in the middle, and that by being gender nonconforming, that meant that you had to exist in the middle. Folks who actually occupy that space very near the middle, culturally, in terms of how we politically, culturally, how we treat people, how we respond to people, how they look, what our expectations are, all the junk we carry around and assign to different people, the folks in the middle part of that continuum get way more discrimination, pressure to conform. And even as a trans person, as a transgendered person, I don't experience that in the same way. So it's also just a way to acknowledge that gender, that I have a gender, which is masculine, and that an awareness of that is in many ways just kind of that recognition of that continuum. And really holding space for the people in the middle. Like, it's not like we're not one big trans community and we're all the same and we all have, you know, the same degrees of politics or how we look or how we want to look or any of that. So
thanks so much for that. Brooks, we should talk about the film. And it opens November 2nd, is that right?
Yes, Friday, November 2nd at Clinton Street Theater. Doors open at 6:30.
Wonderful. Clinton Street, you can find their schedule online. Trans Dudes with Lady Cancer. Let's talk about the movie itself.
Okay, let's see. So basically, the movie is a chronology. So we didn't... I think what happened... So Yuan and I got sick in the early spring of 2016. And at some point in the process of just trying to be well and get through it, we had this aha moment. And that's when we said, you know, we really ought to make a movie about it. But there were pieces up to it. And the film basically is chronological. So it kind of, that's the way that it's framed and kind of goes through what we went through.
Yeah, I would say, you know, part of it is also... even though we were diagnosed around the same month, our journey was quite different. For Brooks, he had actually complained quite a bit before that time. And you know, he would tell us, like, come feel my torso. Can you feel this thing? Can you feel this thing? For, like, months. And finally asked me, is it ridiculous to get a second opinion? And I said, no, why would you think that? So that's when, you know, we both ended up going to the same doctor and discovered our cancer the same month. And you know, the idea of the movie didn't come about until a few months later, because we were both, like, going through surgery. We had surgeries on the same day at one point. And then I went through chemo and got pretty sick. And then through that time, my colleague, Nancy, who works at Basic Rights Oregon, asked if I would speak at the Equality Federation conference about being a trans dude with lady cancer. Well, actually, she didn't say that. She said, talk about your cancer. And it was because of that event that we kind of brainstormed about, like, what would be a catchy title that isn't cancer is such a downer? How do we, you know, give some seriousness to it, but also kind of sort of like grab people's attention and not get too downer about it. So I would say that opportunity kind of present itself for us to come up with a title, but I ended up being too sick to speak at that conference. And so then it kind of evolved to, like, well, Brooks have made a film before, and you know, I consider myself a storyteller. Why not turn this into a movie? So a few months later, I would say, like, around July or August of 2016, we decided, okay, we're gonna make a movie about this, because who else in this world can say that they were roommates and they got diagnosed the same month by the same doctor? You know, it's just quite ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah. So the movie is actually pretty short. So it's a short film. It's about 30 minutes or so. And our goal is to keep it short so that, you know, it's a movie that's easy to be, that you can show it easily, followed by, like, a conversation. You can do it in an hour at colleges, at universities, at hospitals. So we really want to get it out to our primary audiences that way, which are practitioners and also transgender people.
And the doctor who diagnosed both of you first, each of you first, appears in the film?
Yes.
Good, good, good.
Yeah, we have several doctors in the film.
And this is its premiere, is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Wonderful.
Can we say it's a worldwide premiere?
We can say that, and it would be true.
Yes.
I feel like there was something else that you said that I wanted to bring up. Oh, it was the political moment. So we are in a scary political moment for trans folks. And I have experienced this kind of like weird deja vu thing. So when we started the film 2 years ago, our big Portland-based health institutions were beginning to provide better care to their trans patients. So in many ways, some of what's in the movie seems like old news, right? Because, you know, now we have an excellent driver's license, and hospitals are getting better about describing one's gender instead of just two choices. There's six or eight choices to really reflect that diversity that we're talking about. At the same time, I'm hearing the news and what's going on, and this, the idea that we've arrived somehow is completely false. And so I actually think it's great timing for us to have the premiere on the 2nd, because it's just another opportunity. Hey, it's going to be 3 or 4 days before Election Day. We can have a conversation about the impact of the election, about this movie, about choices that people could make. And yeah, just it's weird, and I think it's right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think the movie for me too is about showing the resiliency of trans community, because you know, cancer can't erase me, neither can this administration. So it's yeah, we're resilient. We're gonna keep on fighting, whether it's our local institutions or, you know, the federal government. This is just one thing that shows like the importance of self-advocacy, community advocacy, and coming together to make sure that, yeah, we create recognition and rights for our community.
Yeah, you two have created something that can be shown almost anywhere and be informative and I imagine touch people. And I think that's pretty exciting. That's a difficult, very difficult thing to accomplish.
I hope so. Right. Yeah. Come and see. You can tell me if it worked or not.
Well, we have a couple minutes more. What else do you want to tell us about trans dudes with lady cancer?
Ewan and I are looking deeply into each other's eyes, which happens a lot as we're trying to think about something. We're trying to mind meld. Well, it's going to sound like a plug. Can I do a mini plug?
Absolutely.
The mini plug is we love the Clinton Street, and it's been a great partnership, and it's a pretty small theater. So we're really encouraging people to buy their tickets online. So we're already about half sold for the house. So we want everybody to show up, but we want the people who show up to have a seat. So we're really encouraging people to go to the website and buy your tickets ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. And if, you know, you work for a hospital or a college or some community type of organization that is interested in showing this, we are ready to screen it in more places than just on November 2nd. In fact, we have a second screening on November 5th. It's not an open screening, but it's for the employees of Kaiser Permanente. So, yeah, I'm excited. Those are the things that we have scheduled so far, but we are looking to screen it all over the country and maybe abroad too.
Yeah. And is Kaiser the first local medical organization you've been able to work on getting this film shown to service providers?
Yeah. Well, yes. They approached us, actually. Well, I would say specific people who are involved in the LGBTQ employee resource group approached us. So we haven't actually actively worked with the other hospitals, but we will be soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if folks have ideas about that or leads, they can bring them November 2nd to the showing of Trans Dudes with Lady Cancer at Clinton Street Theater.
Yep, or email us. We also have a website, which is transdudes.org. Mm-hmm. So they can email us through the website.
Wait, I thought it was transdudeswithladycancer.org.
Oh, sorry. Yes, you're right. transdudeswithladycancer.org.
We do that all the time, too.
Well, do you have final thoughts for us today? We're so grateful you've been here.
I don't know that I do.
I would say that, you know, we want to thank our family, community. This film is 100% funded by grassroots money. It's supported by friends, and also we did a Kickstarter. We have no grants, no institutional funding, and you know that's somewhat intentional. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we have the space to be gently critical mm-hmm. about institution without being influenced by, you know, how the money is being funded. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right, Yuan, Brooks, thanks so much. We'll be looking forward to Trans Dudes with Lady Cancer showing November 2nd at the Clinton Street Theater.
Alan, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Remind us again what time?
6:30.
6:30. Thank you. Go buy your tickets online. We're going to hear a little bit of Spacer, and then I don't know what we're coming back for, but it'll be more preference. Back to Preference, dear listeners. That was Spacer by Sheila and B. Devotion, which we get to hear at least a couple of minutes of every preference. I wish it was like the old days on an iPod, the old days where you could see what your most played songs were for yourself. Spacer would definitely be in the top five. We, after this weekend's announcements that came out of the presidential administration, Alyssa Pariah recorded a response that I'd love to play for you. Alyssa is a local organizer, labor organizer, openly Marxist, trans, Puerto Rican, and we're very lucky to call her a neighbor and a comrade here. And Alyssa, she's been on the show a couple of times, including just a few weeks ago, to talk with Charlene Carruthers about her new book, Unapologetic. Alyssa, we're especially grateful at the station to be able to host Alyssa's new show on Friday evenings called The Struggle. Just debuted a couple of days ago, last Friday. So please tune in and check out what Alyssa has to say this Friday at 6 o'clock, I believe. So we're going to hear this recording that she made. It's about 15 minutes in response to the Trump's administration on gender identity, sex identity. And so this is her take, her response, and giving sort of a broader picture of what folks should be thinking about and where she thinks they should be heading next.
The Trump administration is moving to exclude transgender people from civil rights protection, defining gender as either male or female, unchangeable, and determined by genitals that a person is born with, from the New York Times today. Okay. I just got home from a reading group where we were slated to discuss an article about gender theory, a scholarly article. And we didn't. We mostly discussed this issue and the New York Times article that most of the people there had read. And just about everyone at the meeting was explicitly pro-trans liberation, you know, all socialist feminists. And this question came up about the fight back now and in the future. And I was having a hard time in the discussion for many reasons. One, I'm trans. I have a history of abuse and alienation because of being trans. And it hits home. But also because what sometimes, often actually, gets put forward as the way to fight back and sort of how to address these reactionary views and actions from on high. Now, without characterizing what other people say, I'll just say that there was debate, and that's good, you know. Don't be afraid of conflict, y'all. I think that the reason on the question of why, I don't know if it's, you know, naked bigotry for the sake of bigotry, but Trump has not, cannot, will not deliver on his promises to his base. You know, making America great again, we assume, means you will be in a better position to be able to take care of yourself and your family. And that's not happening. And it won't happen. So, you offer some red meat to the dogs barking. There's a dog barking outside. His base is also, generally, you know, transphobic. They don't like trans people, and I'm going to say why I make that distinction in a minute. So if he cannot and will not start to deliver on the MAGA promises What he can do is make an attack like this. He's done it before. Link, the last time that he did something like this, where it was a question about protecting transgender children in public school under Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, so that they would not use the bathrooms that they need and deserve in order to feel safe. So this is not the first time. But what this does is it shores up support. So he may not be able to deliver on what he promised you economically or on other wider social issues. But what he can do is make a naked attack against transgender people. And that might actually make some of his base happy and shore up their support over the long term. I think this is the primary reason why this is happening right now. It shows that he can't deliver on things that he hoped to and that his base hoped to. Now, I'm afraid that we're going to continue to see these attacks over and over again. We're going to sort of circle the drain. Every time I think about these attacks, I see a drain in a tub, you know, taking water down and the futility of sort of every time, you know, that the outrage until we calm down and forget, and then he does something else and our attention is diverted there, and we have like the memory of goldfish here. I don't say that to say don't fight, don't get out in the streets, don't express your outrage and do work. Because I say the opposite. I say, please do. There was a demonstration in New York City today in Union Square. I'm in Portland, Oregon. There was one in Union Square, and people, you know, made an attempt to sort of, you know, have an answer to what was happening today and to show their outrage. And that's good. And I say, do it. If I was in New York, I would be there with you. And if I had the capacity, I would have done something out here in Portland today. But I didn't have the capacity and nothing was called for. If you have any capacity, get in touch with me. I need comrades to help me with this. So, yes, you know, get outraged and get in the streets. And I hope that we get a little bit more honest about what it's going to take to end trans oppression. In the group, when we were thinking about this collectively, and there were about a dozen of us, we were sort of throwing darts at this and trying to think about it collectively, which I suggest everyone does, by the way. You know, be in comradeship with other people and think things out as a group. Anyway, I said, well, the refusal to assert and fight for basic human rights being fulfilled, upheld, prioritized, and seen is what gets us this. Everybody doesn't have a house, food, healthcare, education. In fact, like, they are growing increasingly rare. Because in the U.S., right, I'm from Oregon, there's no political vehicle that's meaningful, serious, and powerful to be able to say every human being, because they're born and they're breathing, deserves these things. And the point of our society should be to see those through for everyone. That's not on offer. And I think that's very important to note. We don't have a vehicle. I would say we need a political party, one that's independent and one that puts these fights for universal human rights at the center. But I don't want to turn this whole thing into a, you know, Trotskyist diatribe, and so I'll spare you. I'll say that, and I said this in the meeting as well. It was a 2-hour meeting. And only 12 of us, so I raised my hand about 3 or 4 times. Anyway, that we should pay attention to what the right wing Trump's base, what they have to say about this today. They're gloating. They're very happy. Go on Twitter, look, and read what these people have to say. Pay attention to what their talking points are. How are they? How are their ideas animated? How is it that they are getting an echo? I say this often, and I'll say it here too. The right gets an echo because the left leaves the vacuum, because the right is increasingly taking on more extremist contours, more unapologetically inhumane points of view that are unapologetically reactionary, and we don't really see that being mirrored in the Democrat Party. They still unapologetically advocate for corporations to do well, right, and for the rich to be able to stay rich, that the American dream is a possibility, and work hard, and you know, through true grit you'll make it, and we're not going to fight for welfare, we're not going to fight for a universe that, anyway. If we pay attention to where the right, Ben Shapiro, last night I went to sleep listening to his podcast, and I didn't have nightmares, I don't think, but anyway, because I think we should pay attention. This is a popular figure. He gets an echo. I need to listen to him to be able to get a feel for how it is that he's able to capture people's imaginations the way that he does. And he says about transphobia, or the accusation of transphobia, I'm not transphobic. And he does wordplay, and this is something that, you know, like other people like him will do. I'm not phobic. I'm not afraid of trans people. In fact, I don't even care if you're trans. Go for it. It's not my business. But don't assert that you are owed special rights and protections. The rest of us should not be on the hook for giving you the kind of dignity that you feel that you need and deserve. And that gets an echo. People hear that and they say, yeah, I'm suffering. I'm struggling. I can't pay all my bills. I can't do what I want to do. I don't have special protections. So why should these people? And then they go down the list of all of the ways that trans people, you know, sort of fail morally and, you know, whatever it is, you know, that they do to justify this point of view. But the people who are fighting against that are not exactly champions of people's human rights and dignity being upheld and centered, and people having everything that they need. That's not at the center of their political project. So I feel like we will continue to sort of do this strange sort of bickering with one another, because we have imagined scarcity. That there's not enough resources to go around, so somebody has to starve, somebody has to die of exposure, somebody has to fill up the prisons, and as long as it ain't me, then I'm good, and I'll go along with the status quo until it does affect me, and that's a losing strategy. An injury to one is an injury to all. It's not the old IWW phrase. And because that is not a popular notion that people know and believe in their hearts, it is generally understood as okay if you don't believe and fight for a political program that would see that everyone gets their needs met and that everyone can feel safe and secure. And I feel like while I'm very happy to fight for trans issues, I will be in the streets. I will be screaming. I will be getting people to sign petitions. I'll be speaking at city council. I'll sit on panels. I'll go to conferences, so on and so on and so on. I'll be there every step of the way. But I think it's important for us to keep in mind what it's going to take in order to actually upend this brutality all around us. And I feel like as long as we continue to tinker with this push toward rights, privileges, treatment, attitudes, I feel like, again, we're circling the drain. It's not that it's without merit, but I just don't think that that's going to be what sees us to victory. So I hope that people can speak and think a little bit more expansively in terms of what it's going to take to get and secure the end of trans oppression. Okay? Thanks.
Yeah. Welcome back to Preference, dear listeners. That was Alyssa Pariah. You'll be able to hear her more extensively on KABU this Friday evening. I think it's 6 o'clock with her new program, The Struggle. I want to note that a couple of federal judges this month ruled that the Affordable Care Act's sex discrimination language quote clearly recovers I'm sorry my tongue is all tied. These judges ruled that this sex discrimination clause in the Affordable Care Act clearly requires equal coverage for trans care. So presumably these are judges who were not recently appointed, and it is possible that, you know, any ruling like this is short-lived, but we continue to do the good work, and we continue to push through the courts among many other ways in protecting and extending trans rights. And next time we're on the air, we will launch our new segment called Tell Us About the Legal System, Sasha. Sasha is an attorney with Lambda Legal, formerly a staff person at the Transgender Law Center in Oakland, and formerly before that, DJ here on KABU with Out Loud. So we'll check in with Sasha more regularly on developments in trans law in particular, starting in a few weeks when we next air. Next week we'll be in this spot, 6 p.m., the Queer Boo slot on Tuesdays. We will hear Trans Positive with Guinevere and Emma. And then 2 weeks, which is the 6th, I believe, no Queer Boo, instead election coverage. Wall to wall, so that's where we'll be on that evening, and then Preference will return on November 11th. So that's the schedule. And something else I want to mention, that on truthout.org this week, Dean Spade wrote a piece on trans rights and the struggle and the context for trans rights. Dean is an attorney and activist. We've had him on the show to talk about Israeli pinkwashing, and I want to give a shout out to everybody who 2 weeks ago did great work in responding to the Oregon Jewish Museum's decision to bring in a trans former Israeli defense soldier, IDF soldier, for National Coming Out Day. The OJM couldn't think of a single queer or trans person in our community to have a discussion with on National Coming Out Day. Instead, they had this Israeli former soldier come in, something sponsored by a wider bridge, and is part of a now longstanding campaign on proving that Israel is a satisfactory democracy, because it protects and promotes gay rights, and implied in that is that it's something that Arab and Muslim countries do not do. And Dean is part of a group of folks here in the Northwest who have really worked on exposing that campaign, including its financial threads, which extend as far as Portland, And if you're interested in more, Dean was one of the participants in an action in Seattle that was filmed as in a movie called Pinkwashing Exposed. KBOO was lucky enough to air that at the Clinton Street themselves, I guess 2 years ago. So this is a conversation that we here in Preference keep coming back to. And 2 weeks ago, because of the Jewish Museum's participation in this Israeli propaganda campaign, we had Eva Aronson on the air, and it's something we'll come back to. We've had all sorts of great other folks come on, including Pauline Bark, who I would have loved to chat with today, but soon we will have Pauline back. We're gonna wrap up the talking part of our show, and we're gonna go back to Spacer and let you ease your way into calculated conversations. Thanks all so much. We'll be back in 3 weeks, transpositive, next Tuesday evening. Thank you so much.
You are listening to 90.7 FM KBOO Portland, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Next up is Calculated Conversations with David and Khan, but first let's hear a little bit from Midnight.